This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back. Chucky's coming to you from D.C. on 106.7 The Fan. We are live on NBC Sports Washington. You want to follow along on TV. And we're presented by EMP180 Weight Loss, the standard for weight loss in the D.C. area. Because it works, visit EMP180.com and get empowered. I'm John Paul Flame, joined by Eric Bickle, Johnny Cake Sawville, and Jason Bishop. David Sampson's going to join us coming up in about 15 minutes. He's the former president of the Miami Marlins for 15 years. Now he's an analyst on CBS HQ. We will talk about Manny Machado signing with the Padres, Bryce Harper, and more as the baseball season, we're about a month away from regular season.
Well, it's basically here.
Regular season starts, like, we're having our 106.7 The Fan day in March.
Yeah.
I thought, when I saw that for the first time, I was like,
thought it was a typo.
We're doing a spring training game, an exhibition game.
No, it's a real full-on game. I think the first game is March 28th. That's the season opener.
Well, the first spring training game, what's today, the 20th?
It's like in 3 days.
3 days.
Right. Yeah, it's here. It's fully on.
Yeah, and I love it. We got to get our season win total bets in here in the next couple weeks.
Remind me not to bet on the over for White Sox wins, because I did that last year. And that was a terrible bit.
Okay. I haven't even looked at the
numbers.
Well, what if they signed Bryce?
Is there any way we can get in cahoots with an umpire? Like, apparently people got in cahoots with Tim Donaghy.
I would love to. If I could, it's very unethical, but if I were able to align myself with a game fixer, it would make my life so much better.
Okay. Okay.
I would align myself.
Serious prison time.
Not now, of course, if I could avoid prison time and be completely under the radar.
What if you found out there was a major league umpire that lived in Olney?
Yes.
And he frequented Grill Marks.
So we hang out at the bar at Grill Marks together and order big fat steaks and drink beers and talk about, like, Brewers, Nats games and how he's going to fix them. Oh, so that's called living the dream, JP.
So I've read probably half, if not more, of the article. It came out yesterday online. It's been in my magazine, my ESPN the magazine, for a few days, and I just neglected to read it until Pete came in here yesterday and said, "You got to read it. This thing's unbelievable."
All fired up because he's a ref,
right? So I started reading it, and I never really paid that much attention to the Donaghy scandal in terms of, like, sort of what they officially concluded and everything. And I guess they ultimately just sort of concluded and tried to minimize everything and say, "Look, he bet on his own games, which is terrible," but that was basically the extent of it. ESPN, I guess, decided that they wanted to do more research into it coming up on their 100th anniversary or whatever. And they, 100th anniversary, I don't know if their magazine or I don't know what it is. Maybe the 100th
issue?
Maybe, something like that. So they've been doing this investigation for like a year and a half. And turns out Donaghy was betting on his own games and basically fixing games dating back to 2002. So I think the dates are something like 2002 to 2007. And between 2002 and 2006, he was largely betting on these games and affecting the outcomes, and they were catching on. And buddies of his were catching on that he was doing this, and they started, without his knowledge, betting hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars per game on simply games he was reffing. And he was simply just calling a ton of fouls against the teams he was betting against and calling fewer fouls against the team
that he had the money on. It's an incredible story. Netflix has to come out with some sort of a documentary on this. I got to see it. I mean, who knows who would talk? I'm sure some of these people are dead or in jail. But the bettors were hitting on 88% of Donaghy's games.
Well, he
almost 9 out of 10.
That's unheard of.
He himself was 23-3-4.
What was amazing?
I can't believe the other refs weren't blowing the whistle on him. The other referees on his crew weren't saying, "Hey," and calling David Stern, "I'm going, dude, this guy's shady."
They had to know something was going on.
Unless they were in on it.
How could they not?
Unless I guess that wasn't proven. Yeah, maybe they were. I don't know.
I love what this one gambler said in the article. He goes, did I assume he was fixing the games? Yeah, I did, but I didn't give an S because it was great information.
Right.
From 2003 to 2007, we didn't miss a game. Any game that he reffed, we had a wager on.
Think about that. That's a five-year run where all they did was cash in winning tickets.
Well, and they were betting between, it sounded like, between $500,000 and $1 million a game. They had like a little, their own little syndicate.
Hold on. So how did the people, did that person know that something was going on, or did he just notice a trend?
The statisticians noticed that he was calling fouls.
And they how do they know what the right side is before the game starts?
At some point, he was telling a buddy. So I think he was doing it with a buddy, and they were all on some database together. They had a gambling group of guys that played golf together.
Hmm.
And somehow they were able to observe
through this website
or whatever, who he was picking.
How did the casino not get a red flag?
I think because they were spreading out their bets like
most people.
Okay,
so
That seems kind of hard to follow.
You just got to read it. It is hard to follow, but basically they had a website where they were all betting together, and somehow they could see who he was picking every night.
So they could just see the ref lineup, see what game he was on, and see which way the money moved, basically, and just say, "Oh, I can see."
They could track who his buddy was betting on or something like that.
It says here in the articles, they made connections between who they knew were golfing or were friends with him.
Right.
Now, did they end up shutting down that book, that sports book?
Well, I think they were spreading out the money in a lot of different places.
Books. But I thought that's how they eventually got caught, because that one sports book was
I'm sure that's true. I've only read half the article so
I'm sure
far.
Also,
it's a lot. There's a lot of words in that thing. It's a big
article. Eventually, I got to believe that the NBA hears about it somehow, and they start looking into it. I mean, statisticians have looked into it now, and they say, according to ESPN, they found a 4.1% chance that the foul calls happened randomly that he was calling.
Yeah, it wasn't. There was nothing random about it. They said he was calling illegal defenses early to, like, loosen up the defense. Late in games, he was just blowing his whistle like crazy. I mean, it's absolutely insane.
Well,
it's affecting the outcome of every game he was in.
I partly blame the NBA because these guys have to be graded.
Yeah.
Our NBA refs have to be graded, right? And if they're grading these guys, they know that he's calling these phantom fouls, right? I mean, there's just no way that they didn't know something was going on. For 5 years? I don't get it. And the other refs that were working on his crew, how did they not know something was up?
Well, if the sport's popular and they're getting good ratings, they probably don't care.
I don't know, but what if they were implicated on it?
The thing that was amazing
to me
worth
the risk.
Is eventually he cut a deal with these guys in like 2006 or 2007, and he was only getting $2,000 a game.
Right.
He was getting $2,000 a game. They were betting $500,000 to $1 million.
I would have been demanding a lot more.
That's peanuts.
His setup was $2,000 a game. If it hit, if it didn't hit, he had no. He didn't owe anything.
He had no exposure.
So he was, in essence, free-rolling.
He was Ram-shirred.
Yeah. He was free-rolling, but still, he was getting nothing compared to what they were getting. I think the first time it worked, they gave him a $3,000 bonus sweetener. The first time it hit, he got $5,000.
Okay,
but generally, he was getting $2,000 a game.
Probably made an extra six figures doing it.
Sure, sure. And he lived a lavish lifestyle, belonged to a country club, built this beautiful home. His wife said, though, that he basically was a single guy who was very secretive, was always on the phone, you know, with the door closed. Oh. Basically a terrible marriage, and that broke up almost immediately when the scandal hit.
Right.
Well, that happens for a lot of people who aren't cheating in the NBA.
Well, sure. She found a just huge role, like Jason Knott's in his jacket all the time.
Right.
She was actually scared.
And she didn't ask questions?
No, she said she was scared.
Yeah.
She knew something was shady. She tried to rationalize it in her brain and say it was golf bets.
Yeah, I'm so sure.
But she knew it was more than that.
Yeah.
And got four kids, four daughters.
But it is amazing how the NBA did a pretty, you know, that was serious damage for the league. But they basically minimized it to, yeah, he just was betting on his own games, a la kind of like a Pete Rose thing. But no big deal.
Huge deal.
Huge deal. He was affecting the outcome of every game he bet. It sounds like every game he worked. Like 5 years.
I wonder how much.
And he showed how easy it was to do it. Like, you could do it in other sports. Like, just think about the NFL and the playoffs and all the controversial calls, whether it's pass interference, hit with the helmet. I guess that happened in it happens in so many games. Judgment calls, which you can easily sway, which are huge plays, especially in the NFL. Pass interference. What's not a pass interference? Look at the New Orleans game. New Orleans believes they should have advanced because it was a non-call.
Okay, but my point is, if that happened over and over and over and over again for 4 or 5 years with that exact same crew or that exact same ref, someone's got to know something, and the whistle's got to be blown. I don't get that. I don't understand.
I think he was doing,
how was he still working?
He was doing some subtle things, too, where he was just giving like star players early fouls in the third quarter so they'd have to be benched for a while, and then the other team would go on a run.
Yeah. Well, he's blatantly affecting the outcome of every single game he refed, which is unbelievable.
But there are so many judgment calls. I can't believe they have an NBA ref account. That Bradley Beal walk, which wasn't called, I believe the NBA ref Twitter account said that it wasn't a walk.
That's correct.
They claimed it was not a walk. It was not traveling.
They tried to say something like he lost control of the ball or something.
He took five steps.
And then he could take an extra two steps.
He did lose control of the ball, but he had taken 3 or 4 steps before he lost the ball.
He
walked before he lost the ball.
Okay, I'd have to look at it again. I didn't buy what they were saying, but I thought he took 2 steps and then lost the ball.
Blake Griffin definitely thought he walked if you saw his reaction.
Well, everybody did.
Right.
Yeah. I didn't buy their explanation, but I thought he did drop the ball or whatever after 2 steps, not 3 or 4.
Anyway, really interesting story there about Tim Donaghy. It does make you think how easy it is to
especially
from referees, umpires.
Especially now with sports gambling just taking over the country.
Right.
I mean, every state just caving on this now. Every league just acknowledging this is the future.
You say caving like it's a negative thing.
Well, only in the sense that it's going to put a lot of pressure on guys to stay ethical and do the right thing. That's all. They've tried to stay away for years and years and years.
Especially if they say something like, look, because there's going to be in-game betting where you can just basically bet on every pitch, for example.
I'm very pro sports gambling. It's been a nice cash cow for the junkies thus far. And it's only going to get bigger and better in the next few years.
I agree, Cakes. But I'm just pointing out the obvious. They tried to stay away from it for years, and now everyone's just throwing up their hands.
Society's changing.
Yeah.
Called progress.
I just need to find a game fixer now.
Maybe it's progress, but if all the games are fixed, is that really progress?
They're not fixed. If it is, if you're on the right side of the fix.
All right, coming up next.
Yeah.
Manny Machado signs a $300 million deal. What does that mean for Bryce Harper? We'll talk to David Sampson, a guy who was the president of the Miami Marlins for 15 years, now MLB analyst for CBS HQ. That's next here on The Junkies.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Hey, remember, coming up at 8 o'clock, head coach of the Washington Capitals, Todd Reirden, joins us here on The Junkies. Of course, last couple weeks, we've been spending a lot of time speculating on Bryce Harper. Manny Machado also out there, but he signs yesterday, reportedly 10 years, $300 million, the San Diego Padres. And joining us right now to give us a little insight is David Sampson, who was the president of the Miami Marlins for 15 years. Now he's an analyst for CBS HQ. And before we get into baseball, we just stumbled upon this, and you can kind of fill us in, David. Apparently you were on Survivor and were the first guy voted out. How did this happen, David?
Well, they dressed me like Thurston Howell on Gilligan's Island, so that did not help me.
Wait, the producers force you to dress a certain way?
Well, I thought that wearing a blazer would make sense. I'm not sure where the Ascot buff came from, but then they put me on the Brains Tribe, and that was sort of it. But I had a great 3 days, and I got totally blindsided. I thought I was going to win the game, and before I knew it, I was in Ponderosa.
Unbelievable.
You were out.
So when you're one of the first ones off, You don't even stick around for, like, the tribal, for, you know, all the
voting.
The voting and all that stuff, right? Because you never become part of the jury.
Part of the jury. I barely had unpacked my underwear, right. And I was already off the island.
He didn't even lose weight. Everybody loses weight. He didn't even lose weight.
How boring is it, though? Like, when you're not doing the challenges, aren't you just sitting there bored out of your mind?
Actually, you're not. We were trying to start a fire. They don't show it on TV because you have to edit so much down. We spent hours and hours and hours trying to be Tom Hanks from Castaway. We were rubbing sticks together. We were trying to get the sun to go through somebody's eyeglasses. We were doing a dance because we were thirsty and hungry. I lost 8 pounds in the 3 days I was out there.
Jesus.
There's nothing to eat, nothing. And so there's nothing to do. So all you do is try to make fire and you try to find food. We were digging up berries and trying to see if we could eat them and wondering whether we were going to die like Emil Hirschman into the wild by eating the wrong berries.
That's just horrible.
That sounds like a horrible life.
My daughter is dedicated to the show. She loves it. She's a sophomore in high school. She's seen every season. When I tell her today you've been on, I'm sure she'll know who you are. But I was telling her the other day.
I am known more for that. It's the craziest thing. I can walk down the street and people would recognize me. Hey, you were the first one off of Survivor. Way to go.
Right. I'm sorry, man. But
what year was that?
It was only a few years ago.
Yeah, it was a few years ago. Season 28. They're up to, so it was like 4 or 5 years ago. Huh. It aired in 2014. It was a lot of fun. I'd always wanted to do it. And people, the number one question is, how did you get on Survivor? I've always wanted to do it. And I say, well, did you apply? And they say, no, why? And that's sort of the end of the conversation. I got on by applying, for Christ's sake.
It's not that hard.
That's all you did.
What I was telling my daughter is I remember in the early years, they used to show a lot of, like, fishing, and hunting, and trying to get your food. Now it seems like they just give everybody rice. Nobody can get their own food.
Oh, really? They just take care of you and give you a big bowl of rice?
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's taking care of you, but they give you something.
Right, right.
Is that true?
You do get some rice, but you have to make fire to boil the water. And if you can't make fire, you get it after the first challenge or after the first tribal council. But that's 3 days in. So that's literally 72 hours without food of any kind. You've got some coconuts that you can scrounge up, but those are not really good. They're hard to open. It's harder than I thought it would be. There's no doubt about it.
Mm. All right, so let's get into to all the baseball stuff here. I don't know. What was your first instinct when you heard the Machado news? Seemed to take people by surprise. Didn't think the Padres were that serious.
Well, I was just shocked. You know, a few years ago, the Padres signed James Shields. Then they signed Craig Kimbrell. They traded for Matt Kemp. They were building up, and then they tore it down. And then they signed Eric Hosmer last year, which to me was a typical Boris overpay. And now they're doing Machado. So they've got basically $50 million a year tied into Machado and Hosmer. You add Will Myers to that, who's going to make $20 million. You're at a $70 million payroll, and you've got me and you as the number one and two starters. So they've got to get some real pitching. I just don't know how sustainable it's going to be. I get what they're trying to do. But $300 million for Machado over 10 years, he's just – I'll tell you right now my prediction, he will not be a Padre for 10 years.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, he's got the five-year opt-out, right? You mentioned the rotation. I don't recognize any of the names. Lucchese, Lauer, Erlen, Nix. I have no idea who these guys are.
Sounds like a law firm.
You're right. They're not going to win right away, and he's not going to be a part of that. I mean, they may get better. But they're not going to win a division or win a World Series, not with that pitching.
What's scary is they signed Machado, and their win projection, which I try not to focus on that when I was in the game, because you believe that your team's going to be good no matter what, and you believe that these simulators and simulations are crap. But the fact is they're within 5%, 80 or 90% of the time. So the Padres are going to win 1.5 more games now that they have Machado.
Mm-hmm.
And is that really worth it? I just have a hard time. So they're going to say we're building, we have the best prospects. And I'm going to say that 10% of his contract is wasted and you've gotten one extra win out of it. So it's very hard to say that these contracts are going to work.
I don't know who the owner is, but I know he's relatively new. AJ Preller is relatively new as the GM. I guess he's been there 4 or 5 years. They obviously said, you know what? We're tired of finishing last in the division. Maybe we'll finish third in the division, but we got to make a splash here. So that's why they went out and gave him that money.
you know, and Machado with all the talk about tax in California, and the White Sox signed Alonso and John Jay and three other best friends, so they thought they'd get him, and the Yankees thought that he wanted to be a Yankee. The fact of the matter is, and I've said it before, I'll say it again, players will go where they get paid the most money.
Right.
And it's not that it's good or bad, it's just a fact. And that's what's happening with your guy right now, Harper.
Hmm. All right, so what's your opinion of Harper? We've been here in Philly for the last few days, few weeks. We heard, you know, there's some secret teams out there. Maybe, you know, maybe San Francisco was one of them. Who knows now with the White Sox? Do you think Philly is the spot for Bryce?
Yeah, I think Philly is the spot because they put themselves in a position where they got way out ahead on the free agent situation when their owner, John Middleton, a great guy, just said a bad thing, but it was very interesting and truthful. He said, we're willing to spend stupid money. And I don't think he meant McCutcheon, which was stupid money at $17 million a year. You know, he's a great name, former MVP, but not worth that amount of money anymore, not even close. They wanted to get one of Machado and Harper. So I think they're going to pay whatever it will take. The happiest guy to hear the news about Machado signing was Bryce Harper and his agent.
Why? Explain that.
Because Harper's going to get paid more than Machado. And now that that Machado got 300, Harper has a chance to get more than Stanton, which is what Boris promised Harper going into free agency, that he would get more than $325 million. And that's why he turned down the 300 from the Nationals, because he wanted 326. So I think that he's now going to get it, and it's crushing to me.
Is that because he just wants to be able to say, we signed for more than Stanton did?
It's because Boris wants to be able to be the agent who has the player with the most, with the highest contract in all of sports.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, where does Bryce factor in, though? Where does his ego factor in all this?
Yeah, I'm not sure. His ego is that he wants to get paid, and when he chose Boris as an agent, he made it very clear that he was interested more in money than winning. To me, he's got unfinished business with the Nationals. They were favored to win every single year. And they haven't made it out of the DS, as far as I can remember, but I could be wrong, but I don't think I am. Certainly no World Series appearance and no pennant. So why not go back to the Nationals, take that $300 million, and have that desire and loyalty to win with a team that's really a great team, with the best pitcher in baseball, maybe the best position player in baseball next to Mike Trout, and you should have a chance.
Yeah, it's funny because it seems to us, you know, because the Phillies have been out there and said they want to spend stupid money for months now. It seems to us he's not really dying to go there. That if he does go there, it simply is for the money. He's desperate to go anywhere else, it seems like, if the money's close.
I think that's 100% right, and that's the same with Machado. I can't say that he went to bed after the Dodgers got eliminated in the World Series and said, I want to wake up in San Diego. I just don't think that was in his head. I think that he wanted to go to where the most money was. And again, I'm not begrudging these players for wanting the most money. It's their right. I just think that I wish players would come out and just say it. I'm a free agent, and I'm going to go to the team that gives me the most money.
Why?
Just say it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Why did the Dodgers, the Yankees, why did it never materialize for Bryce, those teams?
Because they realize that it's very hard to say that paying a player that amount of money is going to be the difference maker. And you'd have those teams going over the luxury tax threshold, which means in addition to paying Harper $35 million per year, they're paying a tax above that. So the actual cash outlay, it becomes in the 40s. And at that point, for sure, the juice is not worth the squeeze. Not even close.
Talking to David Sampson, former president of the Marlins for 15 years now. He's an analyst for CBS HQ. Can you take us back to the negotiation with Stanton when you guys signed him to the 13 years for $325? How did you feel? I know you guys were kind of in a bad spot because you had to have a cornerstone piece. But when you signed him to that deal, did you know this was kind of going to blow up in our face and he probably wouldn't live out that deal?
No, I actually thought that he would be the first Marlin to ever play Marlins for a full career and go into the Hall of Fame as a Marlin. I had no idea that our owner was going to sell the team. We had no idea that Jose Fernandez was going to die in a boat accident. Mm. We had a really good team. We didn't win a lot, but we felt as though we had the pieces there, and we wanted Stan to be the face of the franchise. He's that sort of player. And that contract is going to end up being okay because he wants to be good. He cares about being good every year, and he keeps himself in shape. We know him. We drafted him. We knew he wasn't on steroids. We knew that body was real. We know how he gets that body. both genetics and working out, the way he eats, the way he takes care of himself. And that's always the danger when you sign a free agent. You don't really know that person. You haven't lived with that person. But that's why an extension at that level made sense for us. But it obviously none of it worked out, which is why I'm talking to you as an analyst for CBS Sports and why Jeter fired me, I guess.
Can you take us back to that meeting when he decided to let you go? Was it contentious? What was it like? Did you expect it?
I mean, I expected it. He had said through the sales process that he was going to retain me and wanted me to be a part of it. But I knew that he was full of it, and he just wanted me to choose him in the auction because he thought it mattered to me that I was going to stay. He didn't realize that it was just about money, and I admitted it to the all the bidders for the Marlins, unlike these free agents. I said, listen, we need to go with the highest bid who's going to get approved by Major League Baseball. And I was very upfront about it. When he called me, It wasn't a meeting. He called me to let me go. And it was very quick. I said, thanks, good luck, see ya. And then on October 2nd, when the deal closed, literally a true story, once the money was wired into the account, I got up out of my desk with my last box. I walked out of Marlins Park. He walked into Marlins Park, sat at my desk, and that was the end of it.
Wow.
Did you say goodbye to him, or did you just walk right by him?
There was no goodbye. There was not even a see you later. I'm pretty sure that I will take my last breath without having spoken to him again, because for whatever reason, he no likey me.
Wow. Why, though?
I think he thinks he overpaid for the team. I think that he thought it would be a lot easier. I told him throughout the process that running a major league team is a lot different than playing shortstop. It's very difficult. Whatever you think it's like as an employee or as a player, once you're on the other side, it's completely different. The pressures are different. The PR is different. He had never gotten a piece of bad PR his whole life until he started running a baseball team. And I had told him that's the reality of life. Owners and presidents don't win popularity contests. They have a job to do, and it's hard, and he's learned it.
Do you miss it?
You know, I miss the structure. I miss the competition. You know, as an OCD guy, I loved knowing where I was every day at 7:05 p.m. I went to, you know, there's 192 games a year, including spring training. I love winning and losing. You know, as an analyst, I look at all the games, but I'm watching them differently. I don't have a vested interest. I really loved going to bed miserable 90 days a year and going to bed ecstatic 70 days a year, or sometimes the opposite. I loved the chance of winning a World Series, which we did. I loved that part of it, making a difference in the communities like we did as a team. So I do miss a lot of it. But on the other hand, when I sort of take a break and realize that I can travel during the summer or do things that I never got to do after 18 years in the big leagues, I'm okay with it.
Do you still live in Florida?
I do. Why would I want to ever move out of Florida? The weather is perfect. The people are perfect. The community is great. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, I lived in the Northeast for 30 years, and it's pretty good in Florida.
No state income tax. Ah, you're living the dream.
Well, by the way, it doesn't matter anymore because there's no more income.
Well, you got plenty, I'm sure. I'm sure you got plenty stashed away.
Well, you know, I didn't win Survivor, and I owned as much of the Marlins as you did. But no, I had a very lucky career, and I've had a great life. Everything is really great, and I love the sport. I still do. And there's a lot to love. There's a lot of problems right now which worry me, a lot of labor problems. The players are unhappy. The owners are unhappy. And the reason is owners don't understand how the players don't believe them, that they're not making money hand over fist, and the players don't believe the owners. Everyone thinks they're lying to each other, and when that happens, you've got labor unrest, and I'm worried that's what's coming.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, do you think that's going to happen? Was it in 3 years when they can get out of that?
Yeah, it's the CBA expires at the end of 21, and there's got to be some changes. Right now, we need young people watching our games and being interested in our games. We don't want off seasons dominated by the kind of talk that we had this year. You want to emulate the free agency in the NBA or the NFL when players move, and they move quickly. And having Bryce Harper not in uniform right now, having Machado only decide today as we're into spring training, it's just not a positive for the sport at all. So we got to figure out ways to make it better.
Best guess, when does Bryce wrap this up?
You know, he was waiting for Machado to sign, so I think it's going to happen now in the next few days. I think the deal with Philadelphia does happen. Obviously, things could change, but he's now ready to sign because he has the bogey. He knows he's got to beat 300, and he's going to beat it.
All right. Thank you, David. Appreciate it, buddy. It's good stuff.
Hey, anytime. This is fun. Take care of yourself.
Thanks for the time.
Too,
appreciate it.
Yeah, David Sampson, everybody.
He was good. He was really good. Yeah. I would have thought after Machado announced he was signing, it would have happened in the next couple days, if not the next few hours. Obviously, I was wrong on that yesterday, didn't announce it yesterday. I would not be surprised if they announced it today.
I'm just waiting.
I know everyone is.
If I was him, though, I might want. I mean, what's the rush? Get these. See if there's other.
Well, I mean, you want to get to spring training.
Yeah, he wants to get in.
You want to meet your new teammates if he leaves the Nats.
But a couple days, it's not going to make a big deal.
I tend to agree with you.
Well, I'm sure that's what
this
Boris
might be
is
the
doing.
New thing, like NFL guys who like to skip preseason.
And again, spring training is a bit of a joke. I mean, we've been down. We've seen it's pretty casual, and if you miss a few days, it's going to be.
Yeah,
all right.
I know. But Cal was saying, no, everyone's different. Not
he said
everyone's
50
like
at bats, right?
He said he'd like a good 3 weeks of spring training.
Right.
So if you're going to get a good 3 weeks in, he's got to get in, you know, before March 1st.
Cal also never missed a game.
Yeah.
He's a bit of an outlier.
I would think that Bryce would want to get in there and do his work. He seems like that type of guy.
All right, phone number you want to chime in, 800-636-1067. Remember, Todd Reirden, head coach of the Caps, joins us on the Junkies at 8 o'clock.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.
Welcome back to the show, Junks on 106.7 The Fan and NBC Sports Washington. Don't forget Todd Reirden joining us in just about 15 minutes or so as the Caps are on the road to take on the Maple Leafs tomorrow night. So you don't want to miss that if you're a Caps fan. So we all have kids who are driving age, some that are driving age, some around that age. And my daughter got her license about a few months ago.
She have access to a car?
She does.
That's kind of being facetious because don't you have five cars?
I have three vehicles. Three vehicles in my house.
Okay, but your son has one.
My son has one at College Park.
You're insuring four.
I'm insuring four. That's correct.
I'm right. Also, I think, insuring four. Yes, correct.
So my daughter, like about a month ago, she thought she got a speeding ticket, like a, you know, one of the minivans is placed on the side of the road. You know, in a 35-mile-an-hour speed zone. She thought she saw a flash at night while she was driving.
Right.
But we hadn't gotten the ticket yet in the mail until like a few days ago. Very official letter shows up at my house. Now, it has my name on it because all the cars are in mine or my wife's name. So I'm like, okay, we finally got the ticket. So I'm kind of playfully taunting my daughter because I'm like, hey, Juliet, you got some mail here. It's got my name on it, but this ticket is all you. So she was kind of resigned to the fact, opened it up, and she looks at it, and she goes, Dad, this isn't my car. And I was like, how can it not be your car? I clearly didn't get any sort of speeding ticket that I know of. She brings it into me, and it's my son's car. But my son's car had some work done, and I had to bring it back to him.
Back
to College Park. I got the lamest ticket of all time. I got the, you were speeding the minimum amount to register for a ticket.
11
over?
What?
12 over. I got a ticket for doing 37.
I've had that
in
many
a 25
times.
On Route 1 in College Park.
Oh, so this is PG County, yeah.
PG County.
Hey, they want to get you. They need that cash.
I was taunting my daughter the
Did
whole time.
Did she taunt you back then?
She taunted me back.
Of course.
And
good.
I deserved it. I deserved it.
Good for
I
her.
I live in this county. I live in PG. I was
so
being
what
a jerk.
Is that fine?
I mean, it's 100 it's
bucks?
40 bucks.
Oh, it's only 40 bucks.
I mean, it's not the fine. It's just the... It's the death by paper cut. There's 40 bucks here, 60 bucks there, 100 bucks. Like, for going 12 over the limit.
There's
come on.
A spot.
Come on.
There's a road that I drive on, which I've received multiple
tickets.
Yes.
It's almost impossible to drive. I think it's supposed to be 30. It's a two-lane highway.
Right.
Like, how could it possibly be 30? And every time I leave, it's very close to where I coach flag football.
Yeah.
And every time when I leave that football field or go to the football field, I'm thinking I have to be driving 30 miles an hour. And
yeah.
It's all these cars are flying right by me, and I've gotten the ticket a few times.
Do you guys, when you drive around the county, I know in Montgomery County, I don't know if it's statewide, that all I do is just look for signs where it says
photo enforced.
Photo enforced.
Yes, absolutely.
That's all I do.
But
now, where they have those signs, aren't they obligated to have a
usually
thing
be,
there?
No,
usually
there'll
be
not
something
necessarily.
Because there are spots where they don't have one.
Because on my road, the busiest road in Montgomery County, not named Georgia Avenue,
yeah,
there are photo enforced signs underneath the speed limit signs.
Right. But
there's no
there machine.
There aren't permanent cameras set up.
They're just
like
mobile.
They'll bring in a mobile unit for a week or two, and then they just leave
the sign up. That's
but
probably
the sign's
like
up the whole time.
Remember in our neighborhood for years and years, there was a sign that said deaf child area.
Sure.
Right.
I mean, that thing was up there for 30 years, and the deaf child lived there for two.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, I just slept on the fact that there was a speed zone on Route 1. Didn't check for the sign.
I don't mess with PG County, man.
I got nabbed.
Because D.C. and PG County are bad for those, for speed cameras.
Well, Montgomery
cameras.
County has them, too, everywhere.
I'm sure Montgomery County. Yeah. I guess maybe the state of Maryland.
Do they have them in Loudoun County? Do you have signs that say photo enforced? Where all of a sudden you'll have some sort of, if not a mobile unit, you'll have some sort of permanent structure?
If they're not there yet, they will be. Because it's a big, giant cash grab by all the municipalities. So it's coming to Loudoun.
But it is absurd because everyone knows where they are after they've been there for a while, and people just drive their normal speed, then everyone hits the brakes.
Right.
And then they pass it, and then everyone goes back to driving their normal speed.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Now, Montgomery County has countered that by just putting more of them.
Right.
So they're like several now.
I haven't noticed any in Loudoun County. I could be wrong, but I haven't noticed any. Certainly not in my neighborhood.
You know what I get nervous at is the left turn. When you have to take a left turn at a light, and it's green, and then it turns yellow, and you're taking that left turn, and there's a red light camera. A lot of times people turn like on that yellow light.
Yeah.
People are stopping and you cross, but it's technically red.
I do that all the time.
I think you're fine. I think you're okay.
I've never received a ticket for it, but I definitely sweat it sometimes.
Yeah. There's a red light.
Sometimes you get whored because you're behind a car and you're waiting for them to make that turn.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, what are you doing? And then they finally turn and you creep behind them and then the light turns red.
There's a red light in my neighborhood that I've told you about. I run it every single morning because it's too long.
Right. Didn't you get busted for that, though, one point?
Nope. There's never, not at that one. There's never any cars. There's never any traffic. Not at 4:30, there's no one on the road.
Right.
And it's too long, and I say, I'm not going to waste my time. I'm wasting life.
It should be a blinker.
By staying
now, do you
here.
Go
it
all the way across an intersection?
Or yeah, yeah.
You do.
You go all the way across that blinky.
Show. Kind of a show.
I mean, if there was a cop sitting
up the
road,
lights. Yeah. In my
it
opinion,
should be blinking.
It
should
lights.
Be flashing.
Because when I leave in the morning off Shady Grove Road and some pretty big roads in Gaithersburg, they're blinkers.
But there's no way
you
I'm going
stop.
To sit there for 20 seconds or 30 seconds when there's nobody coming. And I got to be at work.
It's why valuable time.
Why don't you send a letter to the county and tell them they need to install
too
a blinker?
Much work.
That's a lot of work. Would you ever do that?
And you know what? They're not going to do it anyway.
Where would you address
I would say it?
It
to a cop or something and say, who do I discuss this with?
They're not going to do it.
Yeah.
I just run it.
Yeah. Well, you got busted for something that you do all the time. I can't remember what it was. Didn't you get busted for something? Maybe it was just speeding.
You never did the Dulles Toll Road okie doke, did you? Where you'd pull into the airport.
No, remember I used to run the tolls without the Easy Pass. Don't you remember that?
Yeah,
way
I
back?
Kinda remember that. Yeah,
I mean, that was probably 15 years ago.
Yeah, yeah, that was crazy.
You're not
yeah.
still doing the bit where you take the paper from the convenience store. You used to do that bit all the time.
My God, I was like 13.
I'm just asking.
No, I don't do that.
How many scams do you think Jason's run in his life?
I don't know. Look, I ran a few scams in my day.
Oh, you're talking about.
I'm not throwing any stones your way.
I know what you're talking about.
He's talking about the way to work.
When the paper was out in front.
Yes.
And it was locked.
Yes.
Right.
I would go and it wasn't open yet, but the paper was already delivered.
That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I did that for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did that for a while.
All right, coming up next, we're going to talk some Caps. Caps in the middle of a 6-game road trip. They're 2-2 thus far. They take on Toronto next. We'll talk to the head coach, Todd Reirden, next on The Junkies.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.